Oh, Vince's theme song. By the way, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. See, we're waving. Hi. Thanks for watching. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Curation CBD, products curated for life. Mike Vrabel will speak at high noon today. We will carry that press conference live, get the reaction of their beatdown of the Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll carry that at noon. That's typically when we talk to our next guest, Vince Ferrara from the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville, at Vince Sports on Twitter. He now joins us. Vinny, how was your weekend?
It was good. You know, Darren, I had a decaf coffee, even an iced decaf coffee, I think, over the weekend as well. So I enjoyed that.
What's the point of that? What's the point of decaf? I don't understand. What's the point of that? A decaf coffee.
Yeah. I heard you guys talking about it. Proof that I listened to you guys. So.
Yeah, well, thank you. Good job. Let me guess. Did you wash it down with some unsweet tea? Now I'm going to hang up on you if you say yes.
No, I don't do the unsweet tea. But to each their own. Here's the deal with decaf, all right? There are times, I know the thought is, and your point was, well, why, if you're not going to use it to wake up, why would you use it? Well, some of us like the flavor of coffee. And there are times where you crave or would like some coffee, but don't want the caffeine to keep you up at night. So in the back half of the day, you go decaf, so you get the taste without that caffeine that keeps you up at night. That would be your answer to that. I'm sure there's plenty of people that are listening and say, hey, I do the same thing. And then also for the iced, I mean, that's a cooler version, a summer version of getting that same, you know, especially sugary flavor in coffee, just in a cold version. So that would be my retort to you.
Okay,
retort. Those of us that do that.
Well, thank you. I'll just take your word for it because I'll never experience it. So, sure, thank you, though. That was a good description. Well done. Let's start with a little drama there in Knoxville before we get to Saturday's
game. Oh, no, there's
never
any of that.
No, I know. It's drama-free, right? They should have welcome to Knoxville, drama-free zone.
Right.
Just to see what people would do. The JP stuff, Jeremy Pruitt, what's going on there with this whole buyout situation? How is this going to play out? There's got to be an answer by sometime this week, right?
Well, it was sort of a power play attempt by Pruitt's, you know, lawyers, legal team, and it's not too shocking that they went that direction. You didn't think, nobody thought that they were going to go quietly. And, you know, Tennessee at the beginning planned to not pay anything. Well, you knew Jeremy Pruitt wasn't going to go for that. They want everything. Now they're threatened to throw everybody under the bus or attempt to. And it was interesting, Rick Barnes firing back.
Yeah,
that's Philip Bone.
That, okay, by the way, fill us in on this.
Yeah, let's stop with the Rick Barnes because you're right. Yeah. That, to me, that tells you – that was a red flag. Like, I was like, oh, like Rick Barnes is willing to get in there and join the fray and really fire back at Jeremy Pruitt, because that's – you've been around it. You're around him a lot. You know that's not Rick Barnes, right?
Right. It's not. And he took the high road. Well, not the high road. I guess he was always complimentary of Pruitt and any of the other, you know, figures that haven't worked out in Tennessee, ADs, because he's been through a bunch of them. He's always, like, tried to be the company guy and be positive about him and support him and things like that. He's never ripped anyone, and so he feels like, why are you dragging me into this? But, you know, I guess the view is, hey, if you're going to try to get to a Tennessee moneymaker with a positive look that you could stain, it would be basketball, and threaten to do that. Now, Rick Barnes sounded like a guy who feels confident that there isn't anything wrong that they would find in this program. He even invited the NCAA to come. Who invites the NCAA to come to their program? I mean, even if you don't think you did anything wrong, that is always a dicey thing. So it was interesting, and we'll talk to him media day for basketball is on Tuesday tomorrow, so we'll get more of an opportunity to kind of talk to him about that situation if he's willing to do it and find out more. And we're going to talk to a legal analyst today on Sports Talk and on the afternoon show that has dove into that. He was the one that, remember, I think I told you guys, Dan Lust is his name. He told me that he looked at the contract initially and how vague a lot of the verbiage in there was and how poorly written that contract was that sort of can give the Pruitt camp some out potentially to get out of you know, firing for cause. So that gray area to me tells me that the best way for this to end for Tennessee is they need to settle and then hope that this kind of goes away without opening your books and every phone call and every email and all that. I don't think that's any route anyone wants to go. Another byproduct of this is Jeremy Pruitt, by taking this approach, can pretty much kiss coaching in college.
Oh, yeah.
The college football goodbye. So if that's worth, you know, $6 million or whatever, you know, he ends up getting out of it, then good for him if he feels like he can stay in the NFL. But putting all, you know, sliding all, you know, all his chips to the middle of the table, I just don't know that it will work to get it all back. But I imagine because Tennessee doesn't want to probably lay everything out, they're going to have to settle and just get past this. I think that we kind of expected it would go that route from the beginning.
Yeah, look, he's putting his chips in the middle of the table because these are the biggest chips he's ever going to see. I mean, he's never going to see – this is his last chance to see, you know, that many zeros on a check with his name on it. I mean, it's right. Just never going to happen again because, yes, one, he's never going to be a head coach again, and it's not just because of this. Two, he's just a lousy head coach. So, I mean, that was another reason he wouldn't be hired. But I've got to be honest, I've always – supported and been pro Philip Fulmer over the years. Even when the AD stuff came out, even before it happened, I said, what's the big deal? Why do people — it ended up being a disaster, but you know, at the time they needed something to steady the ship. But I even said, this is the time, it's okay. Like I've been in his camp, but I gotta be honest, like I didn't want him to comment on this stuff. And when he commented, I rolled my eyes. I'm like, please stop it. Just it would be best if you just remain quiet on this front. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, it was set up very strange because how the chancellor and the president were praising Philip Fulmer so much on a day that they're firing the football coach for all these really bad things in the program. So how can you be so 100% sure that everything is on the coach's lap and there's nothing else that's going to trickle down into the AD's lap or anyone else's lap beyond that? It was just a strange approach there. And then you pay him to retire as well. So yeah, that really hasn't stopped Tennessee from making comments and, taking that approach before, a little bit different with Fulmer than others. So that's another reason why, if you're Tennessee, you don't really – you want to just settle this and have it go away so you don't add more things to the list of criticisms that can come to this. You just want to turn that page and move forward, especially because there's certainly some positivity with the football program now. You don't want to relive another bad time in the public again.
Overall thoughts on the game? I know it got away in the fourth quarter, but just overall thoughts.
Well, I thought that Tennessee had a lot of juice, and for them to be as competitive and have a touchdown lead over Alabama after the first quarter for the first time that anyone has since 2012 against Alabama. Nick Saban kind of said it on his coach's show last week, and that Tennessee was a good team and they present some problems with their pace. And it doesn't give you a chance to get aligned. It can lead into busts because, you know, you're still trying to figure out where to be and what to do. And I thought you saw that tempo lead to bust in the secondary by Alabama and guys not aligned on touchdown pass to Velus Jones. They didn't have a safety in the middle of the field in the red zone. The corner is playing outside leverage to the sideline. So the receiver just runs a quick slant, and then he's wide open because there's nobody in the back part of the end zone. And, you know, a lot of that is just because Tennessee is quickly getting in the line. Next thing you know, you're on the wrong side and not in the right coverage. And you could have that couple of the deep explosive plays were impressive, but I think those were initiated and set up by the pace that Tennessee goes. And look, you have to give Hendon Hooker a ton of credit. He is so much more accurate with those deep balls than Joe Milton was. And look what those can do for you. And, you know, even if they're a little bit underthrown, at least it gives your receivers, you know, a chance to come back and make plays. So you've seen Tennessee a lot more explosive. I think that was very impressive. And then, yeah, I got away from them in the fourth quarter. But that, with this team's lack of depth, not shocked that the fourth quarter, you know, would play out that way. I thought, you know, I didn't want to go moral victory, but I thought there's definitely some things to be encouraged by. And that team, you know, fought, and they're going back and forth with them, you know, for about 50 of the 60 minutes. So I thought overall it was, you know, it was a positive considering how tough the competition is and you're on the road.
Vince Ferrara is with us. And so, Vince, Where do they go from here? How do you build on this performance and with another difficult game on the horizon here? This is the tough stretch.
Yeah, Willie, nobody needs the open week arguably more than Tennessee. I know after 8 weeks, there's a lot of teams. I think Alabama needs their open week too, which they'll get. But you know, 8 straight weeks of games, you don't have a ton of depth. Think about the defense for Tennessee. The defense, the last 2 weeks, basically in an 8-day period, played 101 snaps against Ole Miss, 92 against Alabama. That is insane. And that's with a lot of guys playing a lot of snaps because they're not the deepest of teams. They rotate more on the D-line, but, man, they're down a linebacker. They've been down some guys in the secondary, and they had Theo Jackson go down in the game. So they're not a thin, they're not a deep group. Guys have been on the field. Theo Jackson told me last week he played all 101 of those snaps. I mean, so this team overall, I think, needs this break. They need to get healthy. Heupel alluded to that being the number one priority in the open week. So they did get some guys back. Hooker ended up playing. And I asked Heupel during the week, who's working the ones with Hooker being day-to-day? Is it Milton or is it Bailey? He said, well, Hooker's actually getting some ones, some work with the ones too. So that was kind of my hand. I had heard he had practiced too, that he might try to play. He wanted to play, and because he was there and Evans was there, and also Cooper Mays, I thought it showed that, hey, we're not just going to take the approach of skipping this game. And that mentality, I think, is definitely a positive. And they didn't look at it as moral victory. We hung with Alabama. But, you know, they wanted to win the game. So I think those are all very much positives about how it played out. And I think that can carry over with some confidence once they get healthy and get reset. Because like you mentioned, Willie, man, Kentucky on the road in 2 weeks, that's really where the season will be determined on just how good this first year under Heupel can be. That's the game that you want to set up for. And I think the open week couldn't have come at a better time.
Vince Ferrara is with us, the Sports Animal 99.1 in Knoxville. Okay, so do you think – I look at South Alabama and Vandy. I'll put those in the win column. I know anything can happen, but I'll put those in the win column. Do you feel like Kentucky is the one with the way they have been playing? That's the steal? That's the one they can try and steal? Or could you even give them a chance doing that against Georgia with the way they played for 50 minutes against Alabama? I don't, but I'm curious of your opinion.
No, you're right on the W's, and then if you're going to put W's down, I think you have to put the L down for Georgia. It's only fair, because if they can play up, they could play down. And so I don't see any of those scenarios happening. That's the thing, Chase. You look at this team season, it's not like they've lost to someone they're not supposed to. It's not like they've been blown out. I think it's gone pretty much around what you would expect in terms of the results. All eight games have played out exactly the way I've patterned them out before the year. And the one that can change is that Kentucky game. That's the one that you could put in the up in the air and obtainable. And I think it's Tennessee's in a better position to potentially win that game than I might have thought going into the year or even earlier this year. Because Tennessee is a different team right now. And here's another reason why I think Tennessee has a chance to win that game. The thing that has hurt Tennessee's defense has been the mobile quarterback that has run and converts on third down. Happened with Emory Jones, happened with Kenny Pickett, happened with Matt Corral. I know Will Levis at Kentucky has some mobility. Unless he has even more mobility than he's shown, and they add that to the run game plan, I think that is something that is in Tennessee's advantage. Here's another thing, is Kentucky is a little bit more one-dimensional, whereas the Vols have been outstanding in run defense against running backs this year. And overall, I thought they did a pretty decent job against Bama, and they've done well against everybody. Tennessee gets good penetration from their D-line. They're number one in the country in tackles for loss. So if you get Kentucky behind the sticks, that's a little bit – I know they're a little bit better in the passing game this year, but that's not their strength. Their strength is to play ahead and be front runners. And I think Tennessee has a chance to, with Kentucky, the way they play – to put them in more conflict and difficult situations than they might be used to the way they played. So I think Tennessee has a good chance to win that game. And to me, that swings you from six wins to seven and changes, I think, the view of this first year under Heupel if you're able to win that game. Won't be easy by any means, but I think it is more on the table than it might have been going into the year.
Well, good stuff as always, Vince. Going to be fun to watch the ride. We will talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Always great to be with you guys. Thank you.
Thanks. Vince Ferrara, 99.1, the Sports Animal in Knoxville, talking Vols as they fall to Alabama this week. When we come back, we will get into the Tennessee Titans, their huge win yesterday over the Kansas City Chiefs, 27-3. And they had somebody with a quarterback rating of 127.1. We'll talk about that and much more when we come back on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.